You're listening to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch, episode 551. My name's Dave, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Wayne, as we reach the midway point of our exploration of the Netflix speculative series, Black Mirror. And we've got a lot to say about this episode, which was quite a bit shorter than all the rest. So, we'll see how much we have to say. I think there's a fair amount to say. But, you know, the one thing I was thinking, and we've certainly changed our approach on political speech in the podcast. I mean, at one time, we're like, nope, no politics, whatever. But I think we've talked about this, and sometimes we just have something to say.
Sometime around 2016, something traumatic happened that completely changed our attitude about that. And so I don't think we can be entirely blamed for not using our soapbox every once in a while.
Right. And I bring that up here because Black Mirror is so political once you really peel away the different layers. And in fact, I read an interview with the creator, and now I can't remember which episode it was, but he said they had to almost rewrite the episode after 2016. And what actually happened in 2016 and 4 years thereafter. So anyway, so we'll see how it goes. There's certainly a line in tonight's episode we're going to talk about that you know, really resonated with me in terms of politics. But anyway, we'll get to that.
All right.
Sci-Fi TV Rewatch at gmail.com is the way you can reach us. Check out the Facebook group if you haven't already. One piece of news that I posted in the Facebook group, not sure if you saw it yet. I only did it about an hour or two ago, but we're all, I think, aware that there is going to be a new The Librarians series, which is, you know, not a reboot, but rather a continuation. I think they're calling it The Young Librarians. Now, I can't remember what the title is. But the news that hit today, I guess, I mean, that's certainly when I saw it, is that Christian Kane and his character Jacob Stone are going to be part of this new series.
Yes.
So, yeah, really. I mean, I know you love him as well from Leverage.
I love Christian Kane. He's the best.
And I still got to get around to checking out Leverage beyond just the pilot episode, which is all I've seen. So, it's funny. Somebody posted, in this Facebook thread that I'd run across a couple weeks ago. It's the official Librarians thread, so whoever's responding, is part of the team. Mm-hmm. And he said, we're in the process of still writing. Well, what night's it going to be on? I don't see anything in my TV listings. I'm like,
refer to the bit about how do you even still respond? Writing it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. What we're watching, Formula One, Drive to Survive, came back with season 6 on Netflix. And as I've said many times, I'm a big automotive sport enthusiast, and I still got to watch Gran Turismo.
I was about to ask, certainly that must have inspired you to watch Gran Turismo, man.
Yeah, you would think. I'll get to it. But Fred, what the hell is going on with you Dutchman over there? Not you Dutchman, Fred, but the number one driver in the world, Max Verstappen, is, I believe, Dutch. And the team he drives for, Red Bull, is basically the team champion over the last few years. But there's all this controversy surrounding the Red Bull team principal, which, in American sports, it's like the head coach or the baseball manager or whatever. I don't know, some kind of sexting incident. And, he was apparently cleared of all wrongdoing. But the driver, apparently his father didn't get the memo that, no, it's not take your parent to work week.
Oh, dear.
And, I was saying to Mary, I'm like, because she ran across it and, she kind of sees me watching Formula One. She's like, well, what's this all about? I'm like, I don't know what it's really all about, but I don't get it. It's like your kid is the reigning world champion individually. The team for which he drives is the team champion for the past 2 years. Why on earth are you making such a big deal about all the, you know, he needs to be fired. It's ripping the team apart. And like, anyway, all right. So Fred, if you got any Dutch insight on that, that would be great. Also watching Hinterland, which is the Welsh predecessor to that show I mentioned last week, Hidden. Again, another crime drama. And I always say to my wife, it's almost like right from the start, and we see these camera shots, and it's like, wow, you'd think they could find something picturesque to shoot against.
Yeah,
it's
like obviously whales, being,
oh my God, it's just like, and that's like so much of the international show draw for us is just the scenery, the architecture, and the stories are great as well. But what are you watching?
I think I just have one to report on this week, Dave. I reported on like five last week, I think. So actually I started watching Resident Alien.
Okay, which you mentioned to me in the Facebook message thread that maybe.
Yeah, I might dial back on that a little bit, just not because it's not good, because it is really good. It is very funny. But I don't know if it has, like, when I think about the things we've been talking, especially recently, like the very deep and engrossing topics that we've been talking about, I don't know if any of them would really kind of apply to Resident Alien, you know? It is a super fun show. It's very funny. Alan Tudyk is a freaking genius, amazing actor. He's just – he's great. He's basically an alien crash lands on Earth, and he – well, I mean, this is not really a spoiler because we see it right at the beginning. He kills this guy and takes over his identity, and then it turns out the guy actually ends up having to be the doctor for this small town in Colorado. So this alien, who I think was just basically all his knowledge of humanity has come through watching episodes of Law and Order, is now thrust into the actual real world. It's great. And seeing him interact with the people and learning how to, you know, obviously, you know, we say, well, certainly he's going to be there for a while and, you know, become more like, because actually he's, the reason his mission was to destroy all of humanity that was aborted by the crash landing and everything. So, you know, there's still that. Does he, you know, complete his mission, or has he become too human or too much like, or, you know, the people that he works with and everything? So it's a really, really good show. Like I said, crazy enjoyable, but I don't know if it has the depth that we would. You know, I think after a couple episodes, we'd be saying a lot of the same things, maybe, and everything. I don't know. Maybe you guys tell me out there what you think about Resident Alien. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's seen it.
Well, hopefully he reinforces the front windshield on his vehicle, because we don't want any like projectiles going through and impaling him.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Hey,
again, that would be bad. It'd be worse if they did that. That would be just so, like, for me, I would not be able to handle that.
I mean, it would be like all of the Firefly references that they throw at the audience in Castle, which, you know, yeah. So, all right. Well, anyway, let's get
to it. Keeps having Nathan Fillion in the credits, but he must be a voice or something. Oh, he's the voice of the octopus. Okay, that's where I heard that voice. Okay, now I got it. I keep seeing Nathan Fillion in the credits. I'm like, I've been looking for him. He's not in there. Like, oh, he must be doing the voice. And they're like, oh, what's he a voice of? Now, okay, I got it now.
All right. Black Mirror, Bear, episode 2. What did I say?
Season 202. No, you said you were fine. I was just repeating what you were saying to try and get away from my awkward ending transition talking about Resident Evil.
Got it. All right. All right. So season two, episode two, written by Charlie Brooker, directed by Carl Tibbetts, released February 18th, 2013 on UK Channel 4. So this was originally released prior to Netflix taking the series on.
Right. Which and, I didn't realize was a thing until like a week ago. So,
yeah, I didn't either. Now, good. I don't really know what to say about this episode. I mean, I do, but I guess my first thought reading other critics' reviews of this episode, hearing some of our listener feedback, I really like this. Clearly, it's disturbing, mm-hmm. unsettling for sure, but I thought it was a good episode, and some of the criticisms of this episode, I'm not sure I really buy. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to talk about my letter grade yet, but I like this one a lot. But it's obviously an extremely unsettling episode that's constructed around an elaborate rendering of a form of justice. And in this case, it's a brutal killing of a child. Mm-hmm. Do they go too far? I mean, you know, certainly we don't really know what to make of this episode. We certainly have ideas, but once we get to the reveal, really with about 10 minutes to go in the episode,
yeah,
I think most of us are like, well, I didn't see that coming. I mean, right. I didn't.
No. The first time I saw this was, you know, yeah, probably about a half hour of not having any clue what's going on, but certainly sympathizing with our hoodied, you know, I hesitate to use the word heroine, but our protagonist at the time. And then all of a sudden, everything gets turned upside down. And it is a major shift and, you know, a big reveal there. And very, very much a twist of the plot. But, you know, ultimately, like, okay, so that's like the first thing I remember about. Like, there was like, you had no clue what's going on. All of a sudden, there's this massive plot twist and everything is just like completely different than what you thought might be going on. But I think really the strength of this episode lies in what you were just hinting at is, you know, and Alan from England also mentions this, is like, is this justice or is this torture or is this vengeance, right? You know, is what Victoria is her name, right? I believe.
Yes.
Right? So what she did is obviously horrible, right? Her and her boyfriend, did something beyond the pale, but her punishment is also like beyond the pale. And, you know, you like, we live in civil, you know, England, United States, we at least we suppose ourselves to be civilized countries. Like, I think at the end of this, really, we're at, you know, that question is primary. Like, you know, what is this okay? Are we okay with how she's being treated? Do we think that this is just, or is this beyond the price that she should be paying, even though what she did was horrific?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've really come to understand is how the rest of the world views the United States politically, but also that the rest of the world faces the same social problems that we face here in the States. Clearly, we've got a form of vigilantism, which I think by most accounts, I think the conventional wisdom is we don't want to devolve into a society of vigilantes. But when you look at, you know, guns in the United States, it's no surprise that we have, you know, infinitely more gun deaths than the rest of the world, because the rest of the world has common sense gun laws. And before you out there start hitting me with your Second Amendment, I would urge you to actually read the Second Amendment and the context with which it was originally framed, then get back to me. But you know, if you disagree with me, you're probably not going to do that. Anyway, you know, that said, there's so much vigilantism that's taking place here in the U.S. Razor wire in, you know, the rivers in Texas to keep the other from coming into the United States, and you know, just taking glee almost when they stop somebody. And when I say stop somebody, these people die with young children. And and it's like, I don't know that we see that to this extent in the rest of the world. You know, I am your retribution. Well, that's a rallying cry for one of our political parties, apparently. And apparently that's okay. That's that's a political talking point. People are going to cast their vote because I am your retribution. Okay, I guess, whatever.
I mean, you know, to what you said, I mean, like, I think one thing is that, you know, that stuff like that you talk about is not just in the U.S., but certainly when we see these things in the U.S., they are, you know, reported on way more widely than we would see necessarily in other places, at least in the U.S., where people don't really have any idea of there being an outside world outside the United States and really having no idea. And sure, like all the people who, you know, don't want to send money to Ukraine, if I asked them to point out Ukraine on a map, I think they'd be very, very hard-pressed to do that. So not to get too far off the political spectrum, but to kind of like bring it back, and I guess you're saying is like, you know, is this okay? Like, because obviously this, what is happening in Victoria is sponsored by the state, or at least allowed by the state, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we're living in a state that where this, you know, for lack of a better word, torture of this woman is being allowed as far as her punishment, you know, which I you know, even, again, these are fictional characters we're talking about. God, even if that had happened to one of my children, God forbid, I think I would be loath to hearing her screams at the end of this to think that I'm okay with what's happening to this woman.
Right, and I think it's fair to say, because I firmly believe it's accurate, that here in the States, virtually half of the population would be horrified by this as a form of punishment, justice. The other half would say, gets what she deserved. You know, we can even go further in this.
Right. But I mean, and, did not part of you watch this after you found out what she did? Like, then, I mean, I at least question. I'm like, I normally I would be like, this is torture. This is not okay. But I, because of the way they set it up and the crime she committed, I'm like, I asked the question, right? Instead of just saying outright, this is wrong, I'm thinking, is this wrong? You know? Because what she did is so awful, so horrific.
It is. And I think that's one of the things that we certainly have to question here, because we noticed that calendar on the wall. And I don't think we get an answer to this question, but I'm wondering, does this cycle for her, is her punishment 1 month in duration?
Right.
And then
they got this whole park ready. So is, you know, do they have someone else that is going to be after that? I mean, they've built a whole park just to torture this one woman.
Well, right. But see, I don't know that I think that's the actual case. I guess I feel like once they're done with her, let's say that the month of October, which is, you know, what we see on the calendar, once her 31 days are up, I had to think about 31 or 30?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Halloween, dude.
Right, Halloween.
After her 31 days have concluded, they'll simply move on to the next criminal. Will they be able to find someone who's committed as heinous a crime as Victoria? Well, if the story took place in the U.S., I'd say, hell yes. Yeah. No shortage. In the U.K., I'm not really sure, but the punishment doesn't have to perhaps be as severe. I mean, the bottom line is, instead of casting a vote politically, these people get to buy a ticket to punish.
Right.
And again, we see that big reveal at the end. Clearly we're meant to think about, as you said, whether, you know, this is justice or vengeance. But the other commentary that it makes is on the level of voyeurism that takes place.
Right.
I'm sure everywhere, both deliberate and unintended. So, I mean, you know, in this regard, as we see Victoria at the beginning of the episode, unable to understand why not only will no one help me, no one will even acknowledge me other than filming me on their phone.
Right. Which is basically how the child must have felt when Victoria's boyfriend was torturing and killing her. And all Victoria did was film it, right?
Right, sure. Right. And I mean, we've certainly talked about Black Mirror, as a series that hones in on the dangers of technology. And while certainly that's true, again, are we willing victims of this technology? I mean, you hear people, I don't want to say all the time, but I'm giving up Facebook for a month, and I'm not saying they're giving it up for Lent. That maybe they just realize I've got a problem. I've got a social media problem. I need to get off here. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. And I can certainly understand someone doing that. But there's so much technology that we use that we simply take for granted. And, in terms of voyeurism, we do like to look into other people's lives. And in some cases, maybe it's just to acknowledge for ourselves that, well, you know what? I guess I'm okay because this person is going through the same kinds of things I'm going through. They're doing the same dumb stuff that I'm doing, and I got to stop beating myself up over it. Well, that's a voyeurism of a level that I think most of us would say is acceptable. I forget who the person was that said, I read to know I'm not alone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with that. And also, well, the other end of that is that we are revealing more of ourselves and putting more of ourselves out there again, this is something we've seen in a number already of the episodes of Black Mirror that we've watched so far, of anywhere from Lainey or Lacey taking a picture of her cookie and her mocha thing, whatever Alan was talking about.
An actual cookie.
Yeah, yeah. The people hashtagging death to whoever from last week and everything, that there's people putting stuff out there. We are giving up more of ourselves as well. So it's voyeuristic on the one hand for the people who watch it, but it's also, I don't know what the word would be for if you're narcissistic, I guess, maybe, like thinking everything in my life needs to be filmed, recorded, and shared.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also fair to say that as a society, we've become desensitized to violence. But I think what we really need to take a look at is the fact that we've been desensitized to the pain felt by victims of families. Again, how else do you explain a nation that refuses to make changes after one school shooting, two school shootings, three? Yeah. I mean, how many, literally dozens of school shootings?
Yeah.
But that's not enough. And again, you know, that Second Amendment crap and, oh, I need to defend myself. Well, there's no data that says arming citizens is going to reduce violent crime. It's just not there.
Well, it's actually funny because I was up in Buffalo a couple weekends ago, and a friend of my cousin's who I would go up there every summer for like a week. So I hung out with my cousin and his friends. So my cousin's friends also kind of became my friends too there. Our one buddy who lives down in Atlanta talks about how he carries a gun with him everywhere. And it's just like, yeah, because everyone's carrying a gun. Like, you have to protect yourself. I'm like, Jesus, like, you know, good God, man. You know, it's just crazy to think like that, you know, like where are we living, man? What the hell is this?
Well, yeah, but again, like I just said, there's no data to support that line of thinking.
So I'm sure like the violence, the amount of killings in Atlanta, I'm sure are proportional to pretty much any other city. I might be wrong in saying that, but I would take a guess that I'm not.
But what I'm getting at is the whole good guy with a gun, you know, response to violence and violent crime. And again, more often than not, the good guy with the gun, his or her gun is used against them.
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to go down that because I think the thing here is that clearly this citizenry in the episode has not only become desensitized to violence and pain, they're kind of reveling in it. And maybe you argue, like I think sort of what you were implying a few minutes ago, that when faced with a crime of this magnitude, well, that's understandable that they do see it as a form of justice. And, you know, again, whether it goes too far, you know, we'll certainly.
You know what they don't see? All those people who are there at the park, it's an amusement for them, right? It's a lark. It's a fun vacation, right? Let's go and watch this woman. But they don't hear her screams when they wipe her memory,
right?
Right. They don't see what, you know, how this has to get set up. And again, I dare say that if they did, that they would not necessarily be so carefree about their vacation day that they're spending to watching this.
Yeah. See, but that's my problem. I'm not convinced that that's the case for the majority or at least half of the people. But the other thing that I see as a criticism I've heard this criticism made is that, well, once you know what the big reveal is, what do you gain by a rewatch? And I'm thinking, well, you know, you could say that about tons of shows. So I don't know that I necessarily buy that. I mean, one of the things I started looking for on the rewatch are clues being dropped along the way. And fine.
Well, I mean, the big clue being that there's this woman that that she just runs into at a gas station, all of a sudden is on mission for exactly what she needs to do, right?
Well, sure.
Like, right. Wait a second, hold on. You know, like that should have been kind of clue number one for her, I guess. Right. Helped her any, because I'm sure there's repeating this every day, there's got to be times when she runs to the gas station. She's like, this is weird, man. Like, why are you helping me? Get away. I'm leaving, you know, or something like that.
All right. Well, the other thing we've talked about with time loops is whether or not the character experiencing the loop remembers what happened previously and carries that knowledge with him or her into the new present loop and then makes adjustments accordingly. And as we've said a number of times, we've seen it both ways. here, it's not a time loop, but it's like a cycle. And we do see that she kind of remembers some things. She was like, I remember the woods. I remember you. So because of the drugs that I guess they're giving her, the neural shocks or whatever they're doing to her, it, you know, doesn't let her really think about what it is she's experienced in the previous cycles, but you know, little bits and pieces. But for me, about halfway through the episode, we see the white teddy bear, yeah, which on the first watch,
you have no idea.
Yeah, right. And so like, fine, the episode's called White Bear. Oh, okay. Why should it? Yeah. Okay. And then of course the symbol,
right,
that is white. Okay. Fine. You know, now we know, and we learn later on, oh, that was his tattoo that I guess led authorities to being able to apprehend. That's the other thing I said to my wife the other day. It's like, when are criminals going to wake up to the fact that tattoos are a bad idea?
Distinctive, right?
So I can't tell you how many shows we've seen where, well, you know, we don't have a, you know, a good look at his face, but that's a pretty damn distinctive tattoo on his arm,
yeah.
You know, and of course now law enforcement includes tattoos in their database. So they just search and it's like, ah, that's who it is. And then of course, you know, all the flashbacks that we see with Victoria. So, I mean, that opening scene, we see Victoria played by Lenora Critchlow, who, as I know you know, was Annie in Being Human. She was the ghost, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And again, another
much different
show.
Character.
Yeah. Another show we've talked about covering from time to time.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about Being Human. That is a great show. That'd be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, and again, there is an American version as well. Which
is also very good.
Yes, I was just going to say.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. And it always makes me think of Life on Mars, that the American version is good, albeit maybe not as good as the UK version. But still good in its own right. But we see this woman clearly in distress. Right away, we're meant to notice the bandages on her wrist and possible suicide attempts, pills on the floor. And again, once we get to the end and we see, you know, the set dresser setting the scene for the next cycle, it's like, oh, you know, and then it goes back to, again, what you said a few minutes ago. Is it overly cruel, or am I okay with what it is they're doing to her? Are they trying to drive her insane? Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, how long do you keep this up?
Exactly, right? How long can they keep doing this? I can't imagine that this isn't causing some kind of permanent damage to her brain, you know? Like, that's just not natural to get your memory shocked out of your head every single night. So to answer your question, I mean, I think if you, at the end of this episode, you're okay with her screams and think that she is receiving just punishment for what she did, you know, maybe you need to start talking to a therapist or something. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to belittle it, but I mean, it's just it is clearly inhumanely cruel what they're doing to her. And, you know, like I said, as a person who has children, and if this had happened, I don't even want to think about it, but it's just, you know, what would my level of desire for vengeance be? You know, would it be at that level? I think I would have even lost the last shred of my humanity if I would think it's okay for this to happen to another person, just to, you know, to because it's not going to bring back the child, right? It's not going to solve anything. It's not going to make anything better. All it is, as you point out, the voyeuristic aspect of it. It's a day at the park for a bunch of people.
Yeah. And I mean, as the story unfolds and we see Victoria essentially run for her life after, you know, only a few minutes.
Yeah. I mean, in her mind, we know, obviously, well, she's not actually.
Well, I mean, but she's physically running for her life. Now we know, of course, at the end, everybody's, you know, they're either actors or, stand-ins. God, what do they call it where they hire people? The
extras.
God. That's
a very funny series too.
Yeah. So we understand that once we get to the end, but we have seen enough genre, horror, sci-fi, whatever you want to call this episode, that we start to kind of determine what we think is going on here. And certainly we've seen shows where, insidious, subliminal messaging is sent through television, computer, whatever. And that, in fact, our character, I think her name might be Meg, the girl that she hooks up with and leads her, presumably to safety, although we learn she's an actor as well. But we kind of have an idea that, okay, something like this must be taking place. So is the government behind it? Is, some sort of terrorist organization? We hear the explanation that, it's affected most people, but, for whatever reason, don't know why, it doesn't affect some people. So that's why it's not affecting us. And, for a while, okay, fine, that's probably what's going on here. Car pulls up, guy wearing a mask gets out. And at first I'm thinking, why is he wearing a dog mask? Because that's kind of what it looks like. But he pulls out the gun, of course, and assume it's blanks. I wasn't sure. I don't think we ever see him shoot into the window and see the window shatter. I think he breaks it with his, maybe the butt
right. And the times that they do, she grabs a gun at the end. I don't know if it is the gun. Right. It fires it and just the confetti comes out of it, which is so. I just kind of go to the assumption there's no actual, and as the girl says, like, she is a dangerous criminal, right? She's a dangerous person. So I don't think that they would put actual live rounds into that situation.
Right. And of course, like her, we just simply can't wrap our head around why no one seems interested in A, helping her, B, afraid of the people running around with guns and
the
carving knife.
Carving knife, yeah. That's great. Which, how is that thing working? Like, I guess it runs on batteries, right? The one I have, you have to plug in, so I'm like.
Okay.
But yeah, that's probably the biggest, Alan from England mentioned the Truman Show. I think the biggest Truman Show moment in this was her kind of scraping the side of the van with the carving, the carving knife and everything. Because, there's lots of things that happen in the Truman Show of like the extras doing like really stupidly ridiculous things to try and, force Truman down a path he's supposed to go. And so that's what I thought was most like that.
Okay. Now, Tuppence Middleton, who portrays Jem, she was in Sense8. I don't necessarily remember her in Sense8, but she refers to them as hunters, and they're, the people with their phones are onlookers. We don't ever learn that that's the official designation. I think she just says that's what she calls them. But whatever. There was a signal, anything with a screen. But that line then, almost everybody became onlookers. For some reason, these two weren't. But then she posits that people were always like this. They just needed the rules to change. And here in the States, that's kind of what happened in 2016.
That line resonates, right? That line really, really resonates.
Right. that suddenly a portion of our population has been told that it is okay to behave and think in this manner.
And if you disagree with that, then you're woke, which is a horrible thing to be.
Right. Now, we talked about the woods and you know, they head to the woods. Victoria has this vague memory of being in the woods. But once we get there, again, the first time, and you see the people that appear to have been crucified up in the trees, it's really a horrific image. And we're thinking, like, all right, well, we still don't know what the deal is with Victoria, but, you know, whatever's going on in this society, where's the government? Where is somebody with a level head doing something to stop this?
But it's all inside the park, though, right?
Well, I know that. But I'm just saying, at this point, we still don't know that yet.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, now it's getting, like, you see, like, this is the point where you're like, wait, why are there all kinds of crucified people there? Like, what the hell is going on here?
And then there's the first twist. The guy that ostensibly was helping them get away restrains her, and now he's got a power drill, and he's going to drill into her skull. But then, you know, he gets shot again, making air quotes, by the gun, and Meg, I didn't come back for you. I came back for my backpack. Okay. And then suddenly we've got this plan to go to White Bear, shut down the transmitter, and everything will be cool. I'm like, all right. But it's at this point where we're still privy to these visual flashes that Victoria is experiencing.
And which is actually causing her pain. Like, she bangs her head.
Yeah.
Like at first, I think that annoyed me. Like, and even like the first time, like whenever she did that, I'm like, this is, it's like so overacting. It's just so annoying. Until you get to the end and you see what they're doing to her to, you know, wipe her memory. And you're like, oh God. Okay. Yeah, that's all right. That's all part of that.
And what I guess I'm still trying to figure out, if we get to the end and she gets control of the shotgun and to defend herself, she fires it. And of course, as you mentioned a minute ago, confetti comes out, and that's what triggers, no pun intended, the doors to open, the scene to end, and the reveal that this is all part of an elaborate play with an audience that, you know, is in on the story. So what's the deal? What if she had not gotten the rifle? What if she had gotten the rifle but not fired? Would the scene have continued until she did something monumental, or does she always pull the trigger? We don't know.
Right, yeah, we don't know. And like I said, in the law of percentages, whatever, like that, she's going to do different things every time, right? She doesn't do the same. They try to obviously lead her down the same path every time. And actually, the one time when she says at the end, she says, "Kill me now," and he says, "You say that every time."
Right.
You know, so there certainly probably is a lot of things she does the same pretty much every time. But I would think that doing this every single day, you know, she's a variable, right? Like, all the others are actors and, you know they have a role to play and everything. But I would assume that there's variations to the story, you know, every time, just because she does different things. She goes a different direction. She, you know, maybe when she first sees the guy with the gun, maybe she runs at him. And then they got a taser, and as the, what, Meg, I think you said her name, is like, and then we just waste a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Now, it's certainly not a voiceover, but the MC or whoever that dude is explains more to the viewer rather than the audience. The audience, we presume, knows
all that. Yeah.
Right. All the crime she's committed with her fiance. But for us, it's a good explanation. It, it helps us take the next step as we learn even more, because we see, all right, well, this is some sort of torture, some sort of punishment. We're still not exactly sure, but we're kind of buying into it, and we haven't even gotten to the theme park angle yet.
Right.
So once we get there and we realize that this is the White Bear Justice Park, and I don't know about you, but I had to pause. I want to read everything that's on the sign on the side of the fence. And my argument would be that once they're done with her, so whether it's 1 month or whatever, they'll just hang up a new sign for whatever, is going to be important to the next criminal that they're going to punish. But I really liked how we got to the end and the written by slide pops up. I'm like, oh, there's still a lot of, time to go on Netflix. And then, okay, we're not done yet.
They tell a lot of the story still through the credits.
Right. Right. And with Netflix, we know that a lot of the times you'll see, there's 3 or 4 minutes left, but it's all like who the voice actors are that did the dubbing. And
it's only when the next episode icon pops up that we know it's really done.
Exactly. So, then we get to the written by, and I think once we get to the MC explaining to the audience their role in punishing Victoria, and in fact, they're paying for the privilege of being part of this, is when we're truly horrified. And that while we don't forget what she and her fiance did to that poor girl, I don't want to say one's worse, but it's pretty chilling once we get to that point.
Yeah, very, very chilling. And this the whole idea that it is, yes, an amusement park, right? That it's not, that ultimately that this is for people's amusement to come out and watch this woman. And then what happens behind the scene is absolute torture. It's torture when she's there. They're torturing her. Even though they're not shocking her, it's still torture.
Yeah. And then towards the end, when they put her in the, I apologize, but it reminded me of the Pope-mobile.
The Pope-mobile. You can say it looks, that's exactly what it reminds everyone of.
And I don't know if you noticed, but as it was driving past the people and people are throwing stuff, there was like a little vendor, sponges, $1 or whatever. So I guess you could buy something to throw at the vehicle as it went by. And then, of course,
I'm sure they're selling for a pound.
Right, exactly. Or a euro. No, I guess UK's on, I don't know, whatever.
Well, they're back to the pound now. It was probably euro at the time.
Oh, right, because they, right. And then we see Victoria taken back to that house in which we see her at the beginning of the episode, and how the scene is set up again. And of course, you mentioned her screams, and they are truly chilling to listen to her.
Absolutely.
Even once we know what she's done. So I don't know. There's just, to me, so much in this episode that the fact that we learn the reveal, that doesn't negate the value of a rewatch. And I think, if anything, I'm more horrified on a rewatch than I was watching it the first time.
Yeah.
It's almost even worse. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else?
I mean, the screams are just, they're just, they, I mean, that sticks with you. Like you said, we hear them after we learn what she did. And yet I think that's the moment where we, at least for me, where I actually did sympathize with her a little bit. That's quite a lot bit, I should say. Hearing those screams, you're like, this is just not at all okay. That this is not justice. This is not fine. It's not what civilized people do at all. But yeah, you're right. There's probably loads of people out there who think the opposite.
All right, what else?
I don't really have anything except for after you mentioned that the one girl was insensate. I looked her up, and I totally remember. I thought it was who I thought it was, but she had blonde hair in the show and everything. I believe she was maybe Icelandic too. I can't remember. It's been a while. That's maybe a show that deserves a rewatch. But I don't think I have anything really else to say.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to listener feedback. And Suzanne checks in via email. Dear Dave and Wayne, I wanted to let you know I'm really enjoying your episodes on Black Mirror. And I particularly liked how family-friendly your talks have been, and you guys know how important that is to me. So it was reassuring that I'm listening to hosts that are good guys and don't know what Pornhub is.
Yes, I meant to look that up.
Yeah. Now, I will say, again, for people that have been around the podcast for a while, when we started this back in 2012, we just made the decision that we were going to clean things up because, look, anybody that knows us, if they're around us during conversations, they're probably saying, like, gosh, how do you guys not, you know, say those words in your podcast?
Yeah. it's a struggle because other normal everyday conversation, that word is like every third word out of my mouth. Well, not when I'm teaching, obviously.
You're right. But I mean, and that's the thing. It's not that hard to control, really. I mean, and Michael and I made the same decision when we started the podcast around the same time. And I think for the two of us, it's just like, you know, I mean, does the occasional F-bomb escape our lips? Yeah. And sometimes we're quoting a character in an episode and we'll use the word. But it's just, I think that's just the way we wanted to, proceed with this. So, all right. She says, anyway, my history with Black Mirror is similar to Wayne's. It's one of my all-time favorite shows. And once a new season has been confirmed, I'm always counting down the months, weeks, and days. Every damn time I resolve to stretch out the new episodes, but then end up binging them. I clearly have no self-control.
I know. Every time, Suzanne, every single time. I feel you there.
To me, with only a very few exceptions, all episodes of Black Mirror are great. I'm curious which ones you will still be covering. I liked Wayne's thoughts on the Hang the DJ title. Yes, I did. Yeah. As with that Fringe musical episode, your discussion about USS Callister made the episode so much better for me. Don't be shocked, but I haven't seen any of the Star Trek yet. Not due to lack of interest, just lack of time. That's probably going to be my retirement project in about 30 years. Now, on another note, I've been worried about Dave's well-being since he made that Doctor Who comment.
Yeah, right.
I've told myself that as long as he's still watching those Scandinavian crime drama, he's probably still the Dave I've come to appreciate as a podcast host. And if you can still mock people who put the non-negotiable in words, you're all right, I guess. By the way, how a teacher of all people can be so impatient that even an only 90-minute long episode is kind of a challenge for him is beyond me. The one thing, it's... I think anybody that knows the two of us as teachers would say those two guys are pretty damn patient. So, but for me, I don't really know what it is. I don't want to necessarily put a label on it, but I've explained this to people before. If I'm at home with projects, so like, let's say I'm going to clean the bathroom. Well, I'll go in and I'll clean the toilet. And then I'll say, well, let me go do a load of laundry. And all right, let me go, do that thing out in the yard. And then I'll come back all right, let's go ahead and clean the bathroom sink. And then, okay, put the... So somebody might say, well, why didn't you just clean the whole bathroom while you were there? Good question. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. When I would grade papers, I would grade 5, and then I'd go do something.
Yeah.
My wife, on the other hand, she wasn't a teacher, but she taught, you know, for the federal government, you know, different classes. I mean, she would sit down like and not move for like 3 hours, just knocking out papers or whatever. Yeah. It's like, so back to the, you know, the 90 minute thing, you know, for a 90 minute episode, it probably takes me, I don't know, 3 or 4 sittings to get through. But that episode, as I said in the podcast, that really, yeah, really moved along. Thanks for your work. I look forward to your next Black Mirror episodes and even more to watching Fallout alongside you guys. As always, all the best. Good luck on the dark net. Thank you, Suzanne. Yeah. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and listen to our audio feedback and we'll be right back.
Hey guys, this is Alan from Minnesota with some feedback on a movie I just saw and a little bit about the Black Mirror episode White Bear. First, the movie, Bob Marley, One Love. Ever since I saw the poster for this in the movie theater months ago, I've been just hoping they wouldn't totally screw this up. I certainly wasn't expecting what I got, which was, in my opinion, a cinematic masterpiece. That 44% Rotten Tomatoes score is a travesty. Even the positive reviews mostly sound lukewarm, so I don't know. Sure, I'm the target audience, but the filmmaking craft on display here, from the sharp dialogue in slightly softened Jamaican patois, to the casting, the performances, the editing, all down the line, I felt we were in impressively assured hands. I feel like even if this same group of people made a movie about Bob Smith instead, it would still be gripping, although it certainly wouldn't make as much money. I have seen complaints that the movie lets its subject off too easy. I think people who say this are failing to recognize that this is the equivalent of a biography book that comes out with Rita and Ziggy Marley's name on the spine. If they had published such a book, a lot of people would find it interesting, but they wouldn't expect it to be a dark exposé. People aren't necessarily accustomed to thinking this way about movies, but this one literally starts with his son telling the audience that he was on set every day and that he and his family are also very proud of the movie. So I understood the rest of the film in that context, and given that, they actually don't whitewash him as much as they could have done. It's my second favorite film of the decade so far, but number one was Dune, and I'm going to see the sequel on Tuesday, which may knock the Bob Marley movie down to third place. Okay, White Bear. This is honestly one of my least favorite episodes, and I feel it loses a lot of rewatchability once you know the final twist. I read a review in which the critic, who must have been British, was complaining that it was a rubbish horror movie for 45 minutes, and then the surprise twist redeemed it, since that revealed that it was kind of supposed to be a rubbish horror movie in a sense. But for me, that's an awful lot to sit through for a twist, and then once you already know, it makes for even less to look forward to. Sorry, Wayne, I know this is one of your favorites, but I can relate to being in your position because every time I do one of my Songs of the Year's deep dive episodes on a musician, most recently The Kinks and then Bob Marley, there are inevitably complaints that some of the 10 songs I picked are not deserving and that I left off others which were much better. De gustibus, you may have a bone to pick with me when I get to The Smiths and New Order. We'll see.
Hello, Dave and Wayne, and all listeners to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. This is Fred from the Netherlands with audio feedback 317 about the Black Mirror episode White Bear, Season 2, Episode 2. Wow, fortunately this was a short episode, and so will my feedback be. It gets a C from me. It's mainly running around very scared in a world you don't understand. And then in the end it proves, not to you, but to the spectators, meaning us as viewers, that it's all a hoax and just a kind of amusement park. It really gave me the feeling like the earlier episodes of Westworld. Then you get a mind reset and it all starts over. It's like catching a stray dog in a city and then when you catch him, you just let him loose. And you invite spectators for that. Wow, an audio feedback from Fred in 1 minute? That must be bad. Perhaps I even will make it a D. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello to everyone at Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Alan from England here with feedback about Black Mirror, White Bear. Oh my goodness. I remembered virtually everything about this from the first time I saw it some years ago, and would not really have chosen to watch it again, but it was strangely enlightening in doing so. The first time I watched it, I spent most of the episode about as confused as the main character, except that I was watching more like that roving audience and could sympathise fully with her, not knowing the full situation. Then the full horror wasn't revealed until the end. And then, of course, the fact that she's going to be reliving this, but as if for the first time, every time, for the foreseeable future. So on the rewatch, knowing what was happening and what she's done, it all makes instant sense, but each time she gets a flashback or image about that girl, she recoils, and I'm recoiling at exactly the same time because of how horrible it is, and I'm almost trying to block it out in the same way that she might be. I had to pause this a few times as I was watching it, but I made it through in the end. We are appalled knowing her complicity in the dreadful crime, but it's still hard not to sympathise partially with her in her current state. As we watch her through the episode, she doesn't know what's happened. So is she still the same person? So is she as guilty as she was before? It's difficult to say. Are we as individuals anything much beyond our memories? I seem to reference The Truman Show about every other episode, but this really did have all the viewing and then manipulation of the main character, except the audience here were visible to the main character, whereas in The Truman Show they weren't. And then the manipulation, of course, by apparent threat and threat of violence was turned up to 11. The big reveal at the end, where the audience appears, is reminiscent of a few reality shows. This certainly does examine the line between vengeance and justice big style. Now, even more than in Hated in the Nation. Also, for people from my age and older in England, this episode certainly brings to mind a similar case from the 1960s with Ian Brady and Myra Hindley. And there were young victims, and some of what happened to them had been recorded in various ways, which completely damned the perpetrators. And this crime is the one that stirred many people the most to think about whether they should bring back the death penalty, which so far we have not. But then you also have to wonder whether death would be kinder than continually reliving the nightmare. But anyway, that particular nightmare episode is now over, and I have no need to ever watch it ever again. Take care. Alan from England.
Right, now, you listen to Alan in Minnesota's Spotify podcast, right?
I keep, you know, like I'll listen to like a couple episodes in a row, and then because I don't have like the premium Spotify, but they're still excellent, even with only the clips of the music in it. So I'm still working on Alan. I promise I will get through it. But now I really want to hear what 10 songs you picked from the Kinks.
Now, I'm not a reggae fan, never have been, but I do like documentaries and biopics of artists. See, you know, even if I don't really care for them, there's always something, I think, to be gleaned. Not sure how I feel about familial involvement in these sorts of projects. You know, Alan mentions Bob Marley's family kind of okaying stuff. And I know that's a thing now that you know, families get involved, and I guess you can certainly understand why they'd want to.
Well, but probably just because they own the rights to the name and everything, and the movie's not even going to get made at all unless they okay it, right?
Yeah, I guess, you know, see, I have to go back and brush up on how the law works with those sorts of things, you know, especially when somebody's a public figure. But anyway,
But I love Bob Marley. Absolutely adore his music. And I was really psyched about the movie. I don't have the time to get out to actual movie theaters like ever. So, but if I do get a chance, I would love to go see One Love, and I'm for sure will watch it as soon as it comes out on demand or whatever. But I'm psyched to see to hear Alan's review, because you know I feel like I have pretty similar taste to Alan's, and so if he really liked this movie, I mean, he called it a masterpiece. That's pretty high praise. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that movie.
Now, we know who Ziggy Marley is. Do you know Rohan Marley?
Yeah, he played for Miami.
No, very good.
Yeah.
Well done.
University of Miami, right?
Yes, exactly.
Did he ever go to the pros? Did he ever go pro?
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, he was a decent linebacker.
Yeah, right. Just probably not quite there.
Not quite good enough, right? Like, yeah, that's the crazy thing, right?
Right. Now, Fred, you know, it's funny. In the past, I think we would generally be in sync with Fred in terms of grades. Here, he starts with a C, and then at the end, he's like, maybe a D.
At the end. I can't agree with him on that one. But, you know, again, I get, like, everyone, like, there is a visceral element to anything, any art that you, one person's response is going to be different than another's. And so certainly what we like and what we don't like is, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that everyone else should agree with me like that. And of course I actually welcome when people disagree with me because it makes it more fun.
Right. Now, Alan in England mentions the Truman Show, which you know, brought up earlier, but he also raises a pretty interesting question that I wanted to hold off until we got to the feedback. He asks, is she still the same person as the one who committed the crime?
That's a good question.
And it gets me to thinking, well, is this some sort of roundabout way to rehabilitate her? Not that they're necessarily going to release her back into society, but I don't think that's what we're meant to think, but, you know, it is an interesting question.
I think at the end, they've just totally come 360 on it, right? Because we sympathized with her at first, right? Because we, like her, have no idea what's going on. And we assume that she's some kind of victim here. And then we find out what she did, and we're like, God, like, no, you got everything you deserved. And then they take her back to that house and they hook up those electrodes to her and start shocking her. And the screams are then bring me back around, like, oh my God. Okay. So now I do feel sorry for her again, you know?
Yeah. And that question, is she the same person as the one who committed the crime? Well, does that even matter?
Right.
So you've become rehabilitated. But again, I think that's one of those fundamental questions we're expected to consider. Now, he mentions a real life crime that took place in England. Once he brought that up, which I hadn't, you know, heard of that crime or anything like that, but I'm reminded of the 1994 film Natural Born Killers, which you've seen that, right?
Sure.
With Mickey and Mallory, and while, you know, their murder spree was, you know, much larger than Victoria and her fiance, in this story, again, just the role of the, you know, media, which, you know, in Natural Born Killers is a large part of the thematic material. Uh-huh. But anyway, anything else about any of the feedback?
Yeah, you know, I think with Alan from England, you know, I think the flashbacks were really brutal, and especially if you're rewatching this episode, it's tough to watch those happening. I love the Truman Show connection, obviously, and you know the questions you raised were really good. I think we covered, you know, all of them in the podcast, but yeah, excellent work.
All right, what grade do you want to give it?
I think I might go like A minus on this one. I don't know. It's just because everyone, you know, kind of like a number of people saying that they didn't really like it. I'm like, is there something wrong with me that I kind of, I don't like it per se. I just think that the reason I picked this one is really that question we were talking about, the idea of vengeance versus justice. I think that was really the compelling reason why I picked this one. Alan's right. It's a tough rewatch. You know, it's tough to watch this one again, especially when you know beforehand what's actually happening to Victoria and the sea, all that she's going through. So I'm going to go A-, I think.
And that's what I was thinking as well. And again, I know what you mean when you feel, you know, a bit apprehensive of saying I like this episode. I think I'm sure think alike in that we see the value in it. There's a lot here to really
like
analyze.
Crocodile. So, I think it's probably one of the best episodes of Black Mirror, but I still don't know if I want to watch it again.
Yeah, and for those of you in the Facebook group and I forget which thread, it was one of the Black Mirror threads where I posted the last five episodes of Black Mirror we're going to do, and the one week where we say Crocodile, or I forget what the other option was.
Or it might be something else entirely, actually.
Yeah. So, all right, well, we will go ahead and leave it there if that's okay with you.
That's okay with me.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Thank you for joining us. Love to hear what you think about Black Mirror, anything going on in your genre TV world. Check out the Facebook group if you haven't already. SciFiTVRewatch@gmail.com is the way you can reach us. We'll be back next week to talk about the Black Mirror episode, Shut Up and Dance. But until then.
So in recent news, to file this under, totally already knew that, is the comment I saw on Facebook. In case you haven't guessed, the pair of you aren't very popular.